Welcome to Eagle Eye.
What a break from Manoa.
Interviewing your favorite USA Eagles around the globe.
Tony Limbaugh into the 22.
Now, here's your host, Bill Baker.
Hello and welcome to Eagle Eye. Thank you for joining me. Thank you for tuning in. Please take a moment to like, follow, subscribe, share with your friends, and leave a review as well. I really appreciate it. So, today, interview is with AJ McGinty, the USA fly half, sail fly half, the premiership. But before we get to that, let's talk a quick recap of Eagles overseas. Starting in the Southern Hemisphere, Marcel Brocky and the Western Force kicked off their Super Rugby AU season against the Brumbies. Brumbies are last season's champs, so you knew it was going to be a tough match. Didn't fare the greatest for the Force, but they played well, and they can get better as they play together more. There's a lot of new players in this season, and last week I did an interview with Marcel, and he talks about that chemistry with these new players and what's expected of the team going in. So Marcel started the match, played most of the match, but near the end came off with what appears to be an upper body injury. Hopefully it doesn't keep him out of the game too long. And also, as of today, recording this open, Super Rugby AU and New Zealand Super Rugby is not on TV in the United States yet. I know people have been waiting for ESPN to hopefully get it, but we'll see. We got to just keep on waiting. Rugby Pass did announce that they are broadcasting the games pretty much everywhere except for the United States, so go figure. So be patient or reach out, find out what's going on, and contact ESPN. Northern Hemisphere, Will Hooley and Capelli Pifiletti both came off the bench in Saracens' preseason win over Coventry this past weekend. That's the Green King IPA Championship, which actually kicks off on March 6th against Cornish, so glad they're getting in a season. No idea if that's going to be streamed online or not, or if we're going to get television over here. I doubt television, hopefully streaming rights at least. KP, again, I call him the try-scoring machine, fourth try in four matches. He's got to keep it going. And again, came off the bench. I'd love to see him get some starts as well. Down in France, TT Lamasatelli, he came off the bench for 49 minutes of play. And what, oddly enough, is a big win over Agen, 39-19. I say big win because Agen is at the bottom of the table, and Montpellier is not very far away, only a few points north of them, like three places as well. So this helps the chances of avoiding relegation next season. It's also Montpellier's first win in like five matches, so good bounce back for them. This weekend, Premier 15s is back in action. They were off last week. Exeter Chiefs face the Durham Sharks. Always have an eye on Exeter Chiefs because they have five of our Eagles, USA Women's Eagles on the team. Gabby Cantorna, Kate Zachary, Rachel Johnson, JoJo Kitzlinski. They're all playing really well. And that team also a winner of five straight, and they had some big wins over Saracens and Harlequins in that stretch. So looking at McGinty, AJ McGinty, subject of this interview, and Sale, they've lost two straight. Now, I don't think it's a coincidence, or it is a coincidence. AJ hasn't been in the lineup or started those two matches, same with players like Fap de Klerk. So they're looking to bounce back from two straight losses, and I'm 100% certain AJ's going to be playing this Friday when they play the Chiefs. And that'll be on Peacock in the States at 2:30 p.m. So tune in while you're working, over coffee, whatever. Greg Peterson and the Falcons, they play Saturday against the Harlequins, hopefully. Now, Falcons have had some positive COVID tests this past 2 weeks, which have postponed their last 2 weeks of matches. So hopefully they're back in. Greg's been playing great, so hopefully it doesn't slow him down at all. And a big question there, Harlequins, when are we going to see Paul Isike? I'm hoping to get in touch with him to talk about this. Hopefully we see him this Saturday. And that right there is a 10 a.m. Peacock game here in the States. So tune to that as well. So let's talk for a minute about rugby podcasts. If you're looking for something new or more information about USA Rugby, tune in or check out Red, White, and Black Guy. Out of Atlanta, these guys are great. Preston and Warren do an awesome job. They cover overseas players like I do. But they get into like Major League Rugby, college rugby, and club rugby, and they have a great time doing it. Check them out. They're on every podcast player as well, just like this one. But just like them and myself, we all do this for the love of the game and to help grow the game in the States. So check them out. They do an awesome job. All right, on to my interview with AJ. We have a really fun discussion talking about his youth days in Ireland, his decision between a football, soccer, and a rugby ball at one point, And I think we all agree he made the right decision. And also, we really get into his time in Atlanta with Life University. You know, he coached as well as playing on the men's team. And he has some funny stories about coaching Cam Dolan. So that, and that kind of got me too, because Cam Dolan already capped for USA even before AJ. So I was trying to do math there. But anyway, it was really some good stuff there. But we also talk about his Galway days, you know, winning the Pro 12 with Connick, and then with Sale. So what's the team chemistry like in Sale? A lot of new players. And then also, what are his strengths this year? You know, obviously his kicking game has been really good. He's halfway to 1,000 points. You know, can he get there? Who knows? But then we also get into his future plans. You know, is there a stop in Major League Rugby in Atlanta for him? So he talks about that and much more. So here I am with AJ. Hey, AJ, thank you so much for jumping on with me. How you doing, man?
Great, thanks. Yeah, no, good to be on.
Good.
Follow the show. I'm not on social media, but my brother sends me stuff about your shows with the other boys, so I try to catch up whenever I can.
I really appreciate that. And I know you're not on there much, because I'm looking for you every so often. And like, okay, he's not posting photos. Some of the younger players are definitely, you know, they're all over like Instagram and stuff like that. So that's
yeah,
easy.
Yeah, yeah.
How you holding up, man? It's cold over there right now, and there's snow on the ground, maybe, or maybe up in Ireland there's snow on the ground. How are you handling that?
I've been back this side of the world 5 years, and like Galway and Manchester aren't known for the good weather. This has probably been the coldest I've ever experienced in my entire life. It just seems like it's never going to end. It's like freezing, then it's lashing rain, then we've had snow. And snow that, like, usually it doesn't stick here, but it's stuck. So I've had some indoor training sessions. Have to go to the university to train, sort of on the AstroTurf. it's brutal conditions up here at the moment.
Well, I know the match on Friday against Bath. Was it Bath? Did you play Bath on Friday? Who'd you play?
Yeah, Bath is on Friday.
Yeah. So you came into the match, and Faf was already in for a few minutes before you. And then he was still taking the kicks to touch. I'm thinking, okay, AJ's feet are probably frozen. That's why he's not touching the ball.
Yeah, it's the most layers I've worn as a sub. They gave us everything, like extra socks, gloves, hats. Like it was minus eight with a bit of a breeze. Like it was freezing out there. So made for very, very tricky playing conditions. But once it got into it, warmed up pretty quick. Just the cold had us all energized, really, the guys that came off the bench.
Well, okay, so, but not nearly as bad as that Connick match in Siberia a few years ago.
That's the thing, everyone, like, what an experience playing in that, but that's what everyone will say. It's like, you've played in worse than this, and yeah, it is true. I forgot how cold it is. It's funny because Val, one of the Russian prophets, Sale, he just pulled up a photo of that game during the week last week, because he was sub for NSI, so... Yeah, we experienced that together, so we should be able to get you this.
Softer ground, maybe a little bit. But so how are you holding up, AJ? How's the shoulder? How's your body feeling?
Yeah, I feel great. Thankfully, you know, I think over the past 4 years, I've had niggles here and there. And as you mentioned, the shoulder gave me some trouble. But at the moment, body and mind are all good, and physically I feel good. So long may that continue. You know, you want to play as much as possible. You're always trying to put yourself in the best position to play. And sometimes, I don't know, you stress yourself out so much about it. And I think that's probably what happened to me in the past. I just like stressing out about like, hey, I got to get really big so I don't get any injuries. But it actually didn't make a difference. So now I'm probably lighter than I was playing maybe 12 months ago, but I feel much better, feel sharper, and yeah, the body's absorbing the contact pretty well for me now. So just got to keep smashing away with that.
Well, I got to assume that, and obviously we don't want COVID to happen, but I got to assume some of that downtime has helped you out, you know, helped you heal a bit.
Yeah, massively. Yeah. I think for all rugby players, really, because the seasons are intense. They're physical games week on week. And I was actually coming back from a shoulder. I dislocated my shoulder in January, and I was probably targeting late April, May to be back. And then with that happening, gave me more time. Like, like gave me more time to just let the body heal, really, because mm-hmm. when I got back in, I wasn't able to get like soft tissue treatment or work with the physios. So it led for like a month of very painful sort of soft tissue massage work on my shoulder, but just the rest, because it's quite full on from World Cup straight in, like season into World Cup sort of campaign and then back into the season. So yeah, it definitely benefited me massively, and kind of seeing the benefits of that now that my body's like fully fit. Probably the longest run of games I've had since I've been at Sale, which I absolutely love, and long may that continue, really.
So AJ, let's back up a bit. I want to find a little more about, you know, we've heard a lot about your path, you know, going from Ireland to New York to Atlanta, that kind of thing. But I want to ask you about a few things along the way. And first, so where'd you grow up in Ireland?
I grew up in Blackrock, so in Dublin.
Oh. It seems like every country's different as far as like youth rugby goes. So what did that look like for you? Is that something that you didn't get into until later and you were trying other sports? Or were you like from day one, your parents had given you a ball and you're playing rugby?
I don't necessarily think it was like parents giving me a ball. It was like I grew up with two older brothers, older cousins. So like they were all always sport mad. So it's like footballs, like soccer, yeah. Rugby, whatever it was, like tennis, golf. They would be playing anything. So I just always remember sort of growing up in the garden with my brothers and my dad playing sort of 2v2 football, rugby, whatever it was. And then on the weekends, you'd go down to sort of the club, our local club, which was down in Stradbrook, which is only like 10 minutes away. And you play sort of the mini rugby as well. But at a young age, I much preferred football. I wanted to pursue football more so over rugby. But yeah. I went to like Blackrock College, which is like the primary school of that is Willow Park. And it's just sort of rugby every day after school. It's just part of the sort of the curriculum. So Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, after school, you're playing rugby with like all your year groups. It's like 150 kids out throwing the ball around. So that's pretty much from the age of 8 till 18. Like that's just the way it is. So yeah, on top of that, I would play other sports as well. So always around the ball, really. Having older brothers, their mates would come over, and I'd be playing with them. Obviously, the smaller guy getting thrown around, beaten up a lot. So definitely toughened me up as well. So just always been around sport, really. Whether it be like rugby or football, were the two favorites.
So what point was it rugby? Obviously, your two favorites are soccer or football and rugby.
Yeah,
but at some
point,
was that Blackrock when you decided? Or?
I guess like I would have played up to under 15s. You get to sort of under 15s in school, and then that's the first sort of cup campaign where it's called the Leinster Junior Cup. So that's very intense training. And when I was in 30 or so, when I was 15, I sort of took a step back from the football. And then when the rugby finished, I went back to the football and just realized like I used to love the football, but after not playing for a while, I got like sluggish or lost my confidence in the stuff I was able to do, I remember. So like the next year I said, I'll give myself one last shot to sort of compete with like sort of the strongest players in my area, the strongest league. So I went and joined a football team called St. Joseph's, which is sort of renowned in the area for like having a lot of talented footballers. So after that year of playing the football, football at the most competitive level when I was 16, kind of realized that all these kids that I'm playing against are playing football day in, day out. Like they'll go to school, play football. They'll train with their teams as intense as the rugby is in Blackrock. So I was always going to be playing catch up. And then when you get to that age, you got to be going to England to pursue like a professional career in football, which I would have loved to give it a crack. But again, I was very small for football, let alone rugby. So I just with the rugby program that is in the school, Blackrock, like it sort of prepares you the best possible way to like be the best player you can be, pretty much. So. I kind of threw all my eggs into that basket then, and when I could, I would still play football every now and again. But that's when I committed most of my time to rugby.
Well, you still play a little football. You see your skills with the feet and that rugby ball come in.
Yeah, every now and again.
Was there ever a time before you came over to the United States where you thought you're serious enough, maybe you could pull on the green jersey of Ireland?
No, never really entered my head. It's funny, like, this is going to sound like I made it up because I now play for America, but I think it was like the 2007 World Cup, and I remember watching the USA game. I can't remember, 2007, maybe if they played South Africa, it might have been against South Africa, but they were playing South Africa, and I remember Mike Hircus was playing, and the commentator said something like, "Oh, Mike Hircus, you know, who's Australian," and for whatever reason, that thought stuck in the back of my head, and even now, I was like, that's pretty interesting. Like, I've never heard of that, like an Australian playing for America. And it's funny, like, I still have that memory. And now I'm in that position as an Irishman playing for America. But playing for Ireland, no, it never really entered my head, to be honest. Like, yeah. When I was young, like, I was pretty feisty and I wanted to outdo whoever I was competing with and I wanted to one-up them. And at the time, like, I had like some talent, but I was very, very small guy. So it didn't really impact games the way, like when I was competing, it was John Cooney, who's, when he was younger, he was physically really well developed, like loved the gym, was always in the gym. And that just wasn't me. And he'd be smashing protein shakes. And I was like thinking this lad's a bit of an aegis, but he was, definitely, like, if you put the two of us together, it'd be like John Cooney. Well, let's pick John Cooney. So, and I kind of competed with him for sort of, it was like Leinster schools, 18s. Then when you left school, you did 19s. And then I kind of like drifted off after that. But I still played the club rugby at under 20s level. It's very competitive. So even though I wasn't playing in the Leinster setup with the academy, I was competing against all these lads when they played in their schools. So it's still a really, really good standard and really, really competitive games. Like, a lot of fond memories of them. So that just never really thought Ireland was sort of like in on my path.
Now, were you always a fly half?
No. So back then, yeah, I played scrum half all the way up. I think when, like, a few coaches that moved me to 10 every now and again, like Tony Smead, who used to coach the Eagles. And then when I left school and went to the under-19s, then the under-20 set up, Greg McWilliams, who was the current US backs coach, he was the head coach of the team. And he moved me to 10 because our 9 was the year ahead of me, and he was a very talented player. And the two 10s that were in that year group as well, one was Ian Madigan, the other was a guy called Darf Sherald, who was like another classy player, like two really good players, but they played for the senior team. So at that time, it was just like there wasn't really anyone else to play 10, so they just threw me in and gave my best crack. But I kind of flipped. I went from, for those 3 years playing the club, 3 years before I moved to America, I would play 10 for the 20s, and then for the senior team, the men's team, I'd play scrum half. So it wasn't until I moved to America that I went like 10 full on.
You know, honestly, I think that's good for any number 10 to play scrum half and the other way around, to learn each other's positions, because you two, you know, are so connected on the pitch.
Yeah,
I think it's smart that, well, not that you were thinking about that back then, but I think it really works out for 10s to really play that scrum half position at some point.
Yeah, it's funny because when I first moved to 10, every time the 9 passed me the ball, I would tell him, great pass, like as the ball's in the air, great pass. And it's like, you know, I appreciate like how skillful it is to hit like a lovely pass. So I just remember I always used to tell the 9, great pass. Not even, I don't know, just in the back of my head, in my head, that's all I was thinking, oh, that's a great pass. It's funny.
Well, typically there's a guy double his size running down on him, so for him to get that pass out to you.
yeah, exactly.
So AJ, let's jump ahead a little bit. So you moved to Atlanta to play, or to go to school and play rugby with Life. You know, tell me about when you first moved there. What was the experience like, and what kind of things did you do when you first moved there?
Yeah, so I moved down in September. It's actually September 11th, 2012. I moved to Atlanta. It was like kind of a gap between, because they run a quarterly schooling schedule. So it was a gap. So it was there was no one on campus. There was nothing on. There was just a few undergrad players that were just staying around doing extra work before their season started. And I just remember it being so quiet. Like I moved into an apartment. There was nobody around. I just moved from New York City, which is just like you can't get a minute's peace and quiet to like
right.
just so calm. And obviously Dan Payne brought me down. So I'd met with him. Yeah, and it was just very slow. It's already had that feeling of like I've just been like everything's been 100 miles an hour up in New York to come down here slower pace. And I was thinking, God, is this the right move? Like, it's just such a big change. And I'd like been on the phone to my parents, and my mum was like, listen, make the most of this time, because once the school starts, once the rugby starts, you're not going to have a minute's rest. And that was so true. Like once we got in and I got like sort of my classes sorted, coaching wise, sort of doing like skills development work, then helping out coaching the undergrad team, to going straight into my own training with the men's team in the evening, it was so full on. And yeah, look, I can't believe that's seven years ago, really. Like yeah. It's crazy, but I loved it. I loved the place. I didn't actually venture into the city too much. I was just living the sort of the campus life. And then as I got more aware of, got to know a lot more people, and then I ventured out into the city, which I don't know, to my detriment at times, because it was a fun time. But no, loved it. Really, really enjoyable experience.
Yeah, the city is a great place to be in your 20s. Like we were saying earlier, I lived there for about 15 years until 2008, so 90s on. And I played rugby for Old White, so we would face the men's team there every so often. And we played in the upper pitch a couple times and the lower pitch. The upper pitch is small. I think at some point, maybe even before you went there, they stopped playing up there. I'm not sure.
Yeah, but, we used to do the training up there.
Yeah. There was USA played Ireland up there at one point, mid-90s. And I look back at that thing, why would they play on that small pitch?
I know.
It almost worked out for USA. They ended up losing the match, but it was a close one. It was wet, cold, and Dan Lyle played in that game. I think Richard Tardis, a few others. But anyway, did you live on campus during this time?
Yeah, so I lived, there's like a block of apartments called the Commons, which I think subsequently have been knocked down now. And they've got like a whole refurbishment of brand new state-of-the-art facilities for student living. But yeah, we lived, I had an apartment on campus. It was the Commons, had out my back door was the pool.
Nice.
Like 5 minutes down the road was the sort of field house and the pitches, and then 3 minutes into classes in the cafeteria. So to be honest, I couldn't believe my luck, like how I landed in that. It was amazing. And then more and more Irish people came over once I got there. So there was a little contingent of Irish people living on campus in Marietta. And it's actually a beautiful campus too, like very small, but it's a very good time.
Without a car though, you really don't have a lot of options except for the pub which I think is still there next to the fields. And then I think there was a couple of gentlemen's clubs up the road.
Yeah, that was fortunate because we got to because I was coaching the under, it's funny because obviously, I went down as a 20, like I was 22 going on 23, and there was the undergrad team that I was like help coach, really. There were a lot of 22 year olds there, so I was coaching guys my own age, which at the beginning I was like really didn't like, because you know it's always tough when someone your own age is like telling you what to do, and it's like how does he know more than I do? And it's like at the start I was like a bit iffy about that, but then the more I'm there, I get to know these lads, get to know their stories, and ended up becoming like really good friends with the guys in the undergrad team as well as the men's team, because down there the men's team all do like doctor chiropractic, so their schedule's full on, so you wouldn't really see them during the day, only in between classes. So that was the tricky balance of being like the coach to these guys who are the same age, and then sort of spending time with them off the field too. So they would let me borrow their cars here and there. We do shopping trips together and all that. So a lot of cool people I met in there.
Well, you know, other universities, the fact that you have an accent makes you much better than anybody. but not at life. You know, so obviously your skill set is what made you a good coach and why you can coach them. Because looking at the roster back then, there was, you know, I think 3/4 of the men's side were not American. It seemed like. So I mean, so when you came down, so when Dan Payne brought you in, was he already saying, "Listen, we'd love for you to coach the undergrads or be involved in the coaching staff in undergrads"?
Yeah, it was part of it, because I think they had, so James Isaacson was there and he was coaching the men's team as well. So, yeah, it was just kind of part of the deal, help out with the like skill development, like kicking and passing for the undergrad team and like the junior varsity lads that were coming in that wouldn't have had a lot of experience of being coached like passing or kicking. So that's what I started off with, like the freshman guys coming in, doing a lot of work with them. So yeah, that was pretty much part of the deal. Like it was full on. Like it was busy because again, like I was also going there to improve myself, and like I just spent 9 months in New York and spent one afternoon in the gym, and now I was going into like a program where it was like 5 days a week, gymming and games and training and skills sessions. So it was very full on. It's like a professional setup there, so it suited me perfect.
Well, talk more about that. Life certainly has a really nice facilities and the more professional environment that when you were there. I mean, how important was that for you? It was, again, you're not, other clubs you're playing 2 days a week and then maybe playing on weekends, but for you to get back into that mindset of that professional environment, you know, what would that mean for you?
Yeah, it was massive because like when I sort of did the year in New York and then this opportunity came up and I'd gone down to meet Dan Payne to check the place out and get to know him a bit and then flew back to New York and then made the decision. And obviously in the back of my mind when I was making that decision, it was like, well, there is an opportunity to, if I'm there for, if I live in America for 3-4 years, that I'll become eligible just with the eligibility law. So it couldn't have been a better fit for what I needed in terms of like strength and conditioning, like a really good environment to develop my skills. The pitch is 5 minutes away. The weather is always great. You know, it's on me to like put myself in the best possible spot I can be in. So, yeah, it was just like, it was a perfect fit for me and got to meet like amazing people down there who are also really passionate about rugby and the game. And like, I'll be forever grateful because again, I made like amazing friends, amazing people down there. And Dan Payne gave me that opportunity. So it's something, yeah, I'll always be grateful to him for.
Did you ever get a chance to play sevens with those guys?
I used to, when they were doing their trial, the sevens trials for like, the sevens is big once the 15 season's finished, and they'd be going to the CRC. I used to compete, like play on the sort of team that would trial them, but right. It's just a bit too fast paced for me. There was too much space to cover, but it was good. I enjoyed it, but because I never really played sevens, and there it's massive everywhere really once you get to the summer. And then I think in the summer I played like a Cape Fear sevens competition as well. So we got beaten in the final by a Tigers team. So pretty disappointed.
So who were some of the players that you were coaching or playing alongside? I did see Cam Dolan's name in there. He was one of the undergrads. Is that right?
Yeah, Cam was. Yeah, coaching Cam. They had a really good team. Like off the top of my head, like Jake McFadden played nine. Who was Jakey was a great player. Joe Cowley was in there. I can't remember if Joe Cowley played 10 or 15. Colton Carriaga, who was my roommate as well, and he was the captain of the team. Paris Hollis, Glenn Maricelli, Big Jake out there, Montana crew, who were very good lads. It's funny, like, because, well, Paris is still plays in for the Atlanta team now. Yeah. I'm not sure if Jake, I think Jake might be doing it, like his chiropractic studies. But no, they were a really, really good team. And then I would have done a lot of work with the junior varsity guys too. So it's funny because like every time, it's probably now up until about 2019, 18, I'd say those JV lads would have been finished. But every time I would have gone back to Atlanta, there was like, I would have known someone at the university that I would have coached and obviously catch up with them whenever I could. But that all that class is now finished, though.
I was looking up Cam real quick, and it's, I don't know, it's funny to me, and I don't know why it's funny, but he was already capped for USA, you know, a few before you. I don't think you were in the scene yet. He already capped for USA. Were you coaching him at that point?
Yeah, I was. I remember him. Like he was quite a flair player. So like he comes back from the USA team. He's like 6'6", and he's like playing against like some smaller guys. And he made a break down the wing, and it's like brilliant. And he just tried like out the back door offload for a 2v1 to the winger to put him away, and he dropped it. And I was just like, oh my god! I just remember Dan Payne being like, what is he doing? Like, have a word with him, because I was like, I'm the skills coach. I was like, Cam, man, just bloody draw him past, will you? Like, but yeah, he loved having a bit of fun. But obviously, he was like standout player, and Cam's a good lad.
So you're saying you're the reason why he goes for all those picks?
No, can't, the picks. Yeah, he loves an interception. He's good at reading them too. Now when they come off, I'm very happy, but I also have to give him have a few words to him if they score, if he misses.
Yeah, exactly. So AJ, now you're away from life, and now you're in Galway with Connick. How did the whole process happen? Did Pat Lamb come looking for you, or did you have an agent, let's say, reaching out to them?
Yeah, so my older brother is my agent, and I think like once I got sort of, obviously the goal going to the, like, first of all, get to the World Cup, and then like playing the World Cup was to perform well, to try get a professional contract. And my brother put some footage together from sort of the summer games and the build up to the World Cup. And we actually played Samoa twice. So we sent some footage to Connacht, and after World Cup, Pat Lamb reached out. And yeah, I remember, like, obviously, probably 2 days after our last game against Japan, was the sort of first phone call I had with him, and it was like, oh, we want you to come down and just check the place out, have a chat and see what you think. And they obviously had, we're looking for 10 cover as well, because they had some injuries. So the timing for me worked out really well. Although I had bought tickets for the quarterfinal and semifinal of the World Cup, and I had to cancel that. Because I went down, and then straight from there, it was like you got I moved down to Galway straight away, pretty much like 10 days later after the last game against Japan. So it's everything I wanted, really. There was obviously, we're obviously pushing stuff out to try get some interest and to get us back in Ireland, close to your family, who, like, obviously been away a long time. It just, yeah, I was very fortunate, and, you know, I was determined to make the most of that situation and get the best out of myself, because the environment there was obviously, like, a professional, like, the setup in Atlanta was class. Now this is a real, like, professional environment with professional coaches in every single department, and it was such a learning culture and making each other better, and it was exactly what I needed, because obviously 24 years old and quite raw in terms of the amount of the match experience of I've had at the professional level and all that. So it worked out really well, and I love the place. Galway's a quality place to live. It was a whirlwind, pretty much, like, but again, because it was so close to home, it was a lot easier to settle, a lot easier to get some help for moving and whatnot. So it worked out very well.
So talk about that environment in Galway, though, because it seemed like those fans are really dedicated fans, really into the matches. You know, it seems like, I've never seen that stadium there. I've been to Galway, but never seen the stadium. It seems like a really tight stadium, and the fans are just smaller, let's say, than others. You know, explain that atmosphere.
Yeah, so like, there's just like a little greyhound dog racing track around the pitch. So it'd be similar to, let's say, the top field at Life University, that there's the running
track around it.
But then the stands are a lot closer. And I think when I arrived, like, Connacht were had played 8 games, won 8 games. So there's a really good like buzz around the city. Everyone was getting behind the team, and the team was playing like an attractive brand of rugby and executing very well. So playing good rugby got more fans to the games. He had like big stars, like, well, John Muldoon, like, he's a hero in Galway. Like, he'd spent his whole career there, 13 years. He's the captain, playing phenomenal rugby. So he's got a lot of support behind him. And then the marquee, like, marquee signed, like, Bundy Aki, who's a big personality. So the two of those guys sort of leading the group. So, yeah, there was just a phenomenal buzz. There was a lot of hype. And a lot of the time, like, the team was going so well. So we was living up to the hype. And the fans, yeah, they're brilliant. It's a tough place to go and play because it's so open, it's cold, it's windy, it's rainy.
Yeah.
So no team likes going to play there. And then on the back of that, like, you play against teams and the intricacies of the attack and the play, it's so difficult to do in that weather. But like, the team were just like killing it, and we're brilliant at executing this sort of the attacking plan. Which I think, like, almost, say it's hard to believe when I go back now, or when Sale went to play against Connacht, and say, everyone comes back and like, how the hell do you play? Did you ever play there? Because it's so open, so windy, like, it's not a nice place to play. But again, with the conditions been so bad, like, it was always packed, like, the whole way around. Like, even that season, they had to bring in extra stands to like fit fans in.
Right.
And then, like I say, city, it's like more like a town, because Galway's tiny. It's 5 minutes from the city, so like, there's a huge buzz on match day.
Galway or Connacht was a great experience, growing experience for you, and obviously we know why it only lasted a season. But you ended that season as good as you guys could have done, obviously, with that Pro 12 title. A lot of us watched that match, obviously, and it was a phenomenal performance by you and everyone else. But if you ever get a chance, look up the Galway radio broadcast of that match, the radio play-by-play. It will give you goosebumps. You won't even know it's you playing on the other end of that thing. These guys were so fun to listen to because they were just so into it. They were screaming in their thick Galway accents. They were just check it out one day. It is phenomenal.
I'll have to have a look at it.
Yeah, but that must have been such. I mean, obviously, you had some big matches with playing at international level with the USA, but to be in that stage for a title, I mean, for your first year of professional rugby, first season, you know, how did that feel?
It was unbelievable. I think whenever I spoke to like my family, they were always very nervous, but I don't know. It was just the environment and the team I was in and the way things were going. I never really felt nervous, or like, even that game, my brother, like, it's easier to tell the story now that we won, but my brother's like,
right,
like, saw me that morning in the game to like collect the tickets, and he just said, I couldn't believe how calm you were for that game. And like, I just like told him we were going to win this game. Like, when we woke up that morning and the weather was like brilliant weather, so I think, like, Pat Lamb, the coaching staff, had just told us, like, every time we've played these guys, it's been brutal, brutal weather. Like, we played them at the end of the year in Galway, and we played them Christmas time in Dublin, and it was lashing rain, so we couldn't really, our game, our sort of, our attack wasn't as sharp. Yeah, and I just felt very calm and confident that we could, like, cut them open and cause some troubles. And then I think in the captain's role, and the backs coach, Andre Bell, who, like, really enjoyed working with him, we just did like a few drop goals at the end of the captain's run. And after we hit the drop goals, he just put his arm around me and said, it's not going to come to that. We'll be like, we'll be clear. And I was just like,
wow.
Like, it was just, you know, you got that sort of, those people around you, very reassuring. John Muldoon, like you said, he was like, from a first year in professional environment, like, he was just a phenomenal captain. Like, it's like listening to him talk, not like hype up speeches, but like, He just talked sense, and he was simple, and like made the hairs on the back of my neck like stand up. Like, it was like he's like bloody William Wallace incarnated to me back then. Like, I loved him. I thought he was brilliant. So I was just surrounded by like really good people, and people had a really good impact on me, and it was a very joyous occasion to win that. Because I think when I moved to New York and I would watch like Leinster and I'd watch young guys that I competed with winning trophies, there's always a case in my mind that I was like, that's what, you know, I mean, that's what I wanted to do. And like, I'm here on a jolly up in New York. so like, if I ever got that opportunity, damn, I'm going to like do everything I can. And again, like I said, like from the opportunity in Atlanta, and then Mike Tolkien gave me an opportunity with America, and then Pat Lamb gave me the opportunity. Like, just like I put a lot of work into it, and I worked my ass off with just like the vision in my head is like, this is all going to happen. This is all going to happen. And then for that, like crowning moment, really, like it was special. It was special. We had a good time celebrating it too. So,
it looked like you did. You had that. Yeah. You had that nice parade going through Galway, and nearly a ticker tape parade. I mean, it must have been one big celebration.
Yeah, it was. It's funny, like even after my celebrations were cut short, like we had a came back Saturday, celebrated Sunday, celebrated Monday, but then I had to go to Dublin because I had to get into the U.S. embassy to sort out my visa to go to America. and then I did a bit of celebrating in Pacific Beach in San Diego when I arrived, which was foolish. Yeah, foolish of me, but I was on such a high, and like I was young, and it was an amazing time.
Yeah, from what you're saying a minute ago, I have a feeling Mo Doolin had an inspiration on your speeches. I heard you've given some pretty mighty speeches to the USA side at times, especially in that Scotland match, I believe.
to be honest, I don't know. Like that was obviously a big build up to that match for us, and a lot riding on us. I think the previous year was it the previous year we played Ireland in New York, and obviously had high expectations going to that game, and was really let down by, not necessarily by the scoreline, so I just didn't want it to be another thing where you build it up, you get to play a tier one team, and you build it up, and then I don't know, you don't rise to the occasion pretty much. So I don't know if I did a motivational speech in that. I don't know, I kind of the moment might take me carried away and I just start rambling, and I don't know if it makes sense in my head. It makes sense in my head, but sometimes I might speak too much.
So let's talk about Sale for a bit. You guys, the chemistry in this team seems to be working out really well for you. You're having a decent season right now. You're right there in the top four. So what's clicking for this team?
Yeah, I think that's the word, really, chemistry. Like looking at this squad now, when I first arrived, there's probably six lads that are still here from when I arrived. Wow. So there's been a lot of changes over the years with playing personnel, and a lot of talented players have come in. So it's getting on the same page with them, and I think now we've had Alex Anderson has also come in, midway through the season, which is obviously tough for him to come in and implement his ways. But we had like a 2 week block where he was able to do that. So yeah, I guess like it's quite a settled squad now. There's been a few additions, but the core of the squad has been around, has known each other, played each other for 2 or 3 years now. So that always has a massive impact on performance on the pitch. And I still don't think we're actually like all the way there. Like we've played well in patches throughout games. And a big thing since I've been here has been consistency and backing up performances week on week on week. And we're still not able to do that yet. So we had a good run of games, and unfortunately we just got beaten by Bath in the weekend. So it's going to be a massive game this Saturday. So I'm really enjoying my rugby at the moment. As I said earlier, like it's like first time in a long time where I feel great, and my body is like handling all the collisions that you put it through, sort of with the rigorous sort of contacts you get into. So I'm really enjoying the rugby. I'm really enjoying the lads I'm playing with. Really enjoying the coaching setup too. So there's a lot of excitement in in the environment, and we just got to keep that going, don't let it burn out.
So what's more important to you? You're 5 points ahead of the Falcons and Greg Peterson's side. Is it more important for you to win the premiership or just finish better than Craig Peterson?
Yeah, well, they beat us away up there. It's like third game of the season, yeah. Which I wasn't too happy about. But he's playing some excellent rugby, like, which is great to see. I was able to catch up with him after the game. But we're going for the title, obviously, with that question. Got to win the premiership. That's the goal.
So I noticed, so for you specifically on the field, your kicking is just... been consistent this year and strong and a big reason why sales are winning matches. Is that something you've been working on this past year? I mean, you've always been a strong kicker, but something just seems to be clicking again, or like you've kind of found a zone. Would that be accurate?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, like getting in the zone pretty much, as they say. And I think a big part of the kicking is like just distractions, just your like ability to like focus on that moment, because I always find that kicks that I will miss, my head's just not there, something will come into my head and it will distract me and take me away from just like being in that present moment over the kick. So I think sort of like off the pitch stuff, which I kind of got into during lockdown, of like meditation, or you call it mindfulness, or breathing techniques, just to hone in your focus on sort of that moment. And kind of read an interesting book as well on it. What was the book called now? It's going to slip my mind. But it was called With Winning in Mind. It was actually about a shooter for the US Olympic team. It's like a brilliant, brilliant book. And a lot of stuff he talks about is visualization stuff. Not necessarily. Yeah, it is sort of like... not necessarily visualization, because that's all about sight, but your mental rehearsal. So it's like allowing your body to feel that moment. So try to do some of that stuff as well. And at the moment, yeah, it's going well, but it's something you have to stay on top of. Like, and it's tough as well to like training for sort of all the different scenarios you can put yourself in when like you're very fatigued and like making those mm-hmm. kicks, because that's also like a big aspect of it, of like getting the heart, lowering the heart rate and stuff like that. So I think over like the last 3 years, I've had all of that stuff running through my head. There's so many things that you try and critique, and that's a big thing, is why you sometimes aren't in the zone, because you're trying to critique everything and you're overthinking. And it's just a matter of like not thinking and doing it and being in the moment. So that's all accumulated, and now I find myself in a position where I feel very calm. I'm very focused over the ball, and yeah, I'm striking them well at the moment. But it's like one thing could set that off, and then I go back to sort of the old habit. So just constant improvement and constantly staying on top of it with our kicking coaches here at Sale. I can get carried away with it. Yeah, there's a lot that goes into it. But that's it. It's like everything, even when you're playing, the more you try think your way through a game, the less impact you'll end up having on it. You know what I mean? Once you like do, like you've done your prep, you sort of, you know what a team's going to give you. And then it's just going about and like feeling it and staying in the moment and just trying to boss it as much as possible. That's probably a big learning for me over the years, is I'll always try, oh, if this happens, I'm going to do this. This happens, I'm going to do this. And you've sort of accumulated all these sort of scenarios over the years. Now, like, I feel a lot more comfortable, a lot more calmer in sort of these chaotic situations. And that also helps with the kicking as well, because it's something that's so separate to, like, it's such an individual thing in a team sport. So, a lot of work has gone into it.
So if someone scores in the corner, do you ever just go, come on, you couldn't have gotten a little closer to the post?
Yeah, that's kind of, or like they'll score in the corner and they'll just throw the ball away. So now I've got to go get the ball and bring it back. And that's one thing as well. I'd never like truly celebrate a score, like as amazing a moment as it is. I would never like celebrate, because then I'm like straight away, I've got to get ready and kick this ball now and calm myself down. So I'm trying to celebrate things a lot more. So like celebrate the try, congratulate the teammates, job well done, and then sort of get my focus in for the kick.
Right now, AJ, you're sitting a little over halfway to 1,000 points. Think you got it in you to get to 1,000? It's a lot.
1,000 points. It's funny because I don't really like doing these things. And again, the brother I said that
I know
watches your show or watches the show or follows you, he'll give me every stat. He'll say, "This is the amount of points you are like for a game playing with the US. So if you had got 3 more points there, you would have broken the match day like points in a game, or that you're on this amount of points right after a game for sale." So I don't really follow it, but. How do you give me a target? Yeah, sure, why not? Let's go get 1,000.
You heard it now, everybody. So I saw you had an article with Rugby Pass recently about other Premiership kickers, English kickers. You know, who do you think we have in the USA ranks? I know we've been away for a year. You know, you're not really seeing any younger players. But who do you think could be a successor to you as far as USA ranks go? I know Will Hooley is there. You know, do you know of any other players right now that are going to step up and be the kicker for the team?
Obviously, Will McGee is that's down. He's playing in Austin. It's funny, obviously, because there hasn't been any rugby. I think Ben Seema, like he obviously had a few issues like with concussion, but he's a phenomenal kicker and he can boot the ball a fair distance. Fair play to him. Yeah, to be honest, I'm not too sure because I haven't really been following the rugby too much and hasn't been on. But obviously, I'm just familiar with Will Hooley and Will McGee and Ben Seema, who've been in and out too. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't want there to be a successor for a long time. So we'll see.
Not yet. We got time. No. So we just talked about kicking. AJ, what do you think? What are your strengths out there on the field? I know obviously you like to get involved in a good tackle. Even Gary Gold calls you the feisty Irishman. You know, so obviously you're not the kind of number 10 that runs away from a big guy. But what do you think your strengths are? You know, outside of the kicking game.
Yeah, I think I like to be a good defender, whether or not I get stuck into the tackles. I'm not probably a great tackler, but in terms of like understanding the defense we're trying to run here, I feel like I've got a really I'm comfortable with what the defense coach asked of me, and I really enjoy that part of the game. I think a communicator, like just sort of bossing, organizing things. I'm quite vocal on the pitch. Do a lot of work on my passing, so just passing as crisp and as accurately as possible. And then I think, like, because I'm not the quickest, but just my intuition or just my feel for the game, I think that's something that helps me a lot. And it comes with like just playing the game a long time and sort of ability to read stuff. So that's probably what my main strength is, I feel. Just keep working on them and keep working on my weaknesses as well too. So I never really thought of how I'd answer that question, but you want to make everything a strength. So yeah, I'm just working as hard as I can on everything, really, on all aspects and components of the game.
You know, it reminds me also, a couple of weeks ago, 2 matches ago, you had a pass late in the match out to the wing. You skipped a player out to the wing, which ended up being the match-winning try. When you have ball in hand, are you more of a strategic are you more strategic? Are you already thought ahead of time what you're going to do with it? Or are you more off the hip, kind of, you got the ball in hand, you're going to make plays every step you take with the ball? Because that was extremely passed. You know the pass I'm talking about, correct?
Yeah. It's funny, like, watching that back. Like, before I got that pass, I knew there was space there, or I had a winger hugging the touchline. And I think, so it was me, it was Simon Hammersley and Luke that I ended up scoring the try. But Simon Hammersley, like, the line he ran actually just, like, froze the defenders, which allowed me to give that pass. Excuse me, but when I watched it back, like, when I caught that ball and I saw that, I thought I had like all the time in the world on that ball and just catch it and pass it. And then when I watched it back, I was like, geez, I actually didn't have that much time at all. So it was a really funny thing, because I was just, like, my close mate here is Byron McGuigan, watching that back, and he kind of asked me the same question. Did you know you're going to throw it to Luke the whole time? Because Byron wants to score tries. He was actually subbed off, and he would have been in that position. So he was raging that he didn't score the try. But yeah, I get like a lot of it is like, obviously, it's your feel, your intuition. And then on that particular moment, that was my fancy ball. Like, that was my number one target when I got that. It's a mix. It's kind of like, what picture do you see, or how's the even when you get the ball? I think, like, a lot of the time, if I try and make a break, if I think about making the break, it's wrong. You know what I mean? Like, if I get it, and I'm like, I'm gonna make this break, it's not gonna work. It's kind of like, everything's in motion, you're setting up a pass, and a defender just sort of puts too much weight on one side or over chases, and then my intuition just like strikes, is like, take it. And I feel like as much as I can play off my intuition, like, we have our shape, we have our calls, but my intuition of what I see and what I feel, the better game I'm going to have, where when I'm trying to think about it and not going off my feel, that's when I'll sort of like, I won't be as accurate, or I won't be as happy with my performance.
So last thing, AJ, what's obviously, you're relatively still young, let's say. You got some years ahead of you. You know, have you thought much about the future? Even, you know, 2023 World Cup, maybe later in your career, maybe come back to Atlanta for the MLR. but even just more the immediate future, you know, how's 2023 looking for you?
It's obviously with the coronavirus, we haven't had, there's been no like Eagle camps, nothing getting together. So like, we've had Zoom calls and spoke to Gary on Zoom calls, and I'm like, fingers crossed that there's going to be games this summer that we can play in, and we get everyone together, because it will be almost 2 years, yeah, since the World Cup,
yeah,
coming around. So yeah, like, I'm really excited. Like, I want to can really happy with how things are going with Sale. Would love to for the Eagles to get together, and there's some good, the draw's been made, but the USA, this sort of North and South America number one spot is like, it's a quality group to get into, like playing against the hosts, New Zealand. You know what I mean? So. I would love to see myself at the 2023 World Cup. That's definitely the plan. Atlanta, my wife's actually from Atlanta. Her family are from there. So, I would love to go back to Atlanta as well. So I don't know. Take it year by year for now. Like, I would love to play in Atlanta, because I think Scott Lawrence, who's head coach there, I really enjoyed him when he coached us, coach at Life University. And then he actually, it's funny, for the Scotland game that USA won, Scott Lawrence came in and did like a week of defense prep with us, and like, unbelievable. Like, he's unbelievable, the detail he goes into, and the video analysis and the prep. So I would definitely enjoy that too. So we'll see how things go.
Yeah, like you said, 1 year at a time. We'll worry about that later.
Yeah
So hey, AJ, thank you so much for joining me. It's been a good time catching up with you, and we got some of the same memories in Atlanta and all that stuff, but looking forward to seeing you with the rest of these premiership matches this year, and hopefully, like you said, getting the USA team back together playing again, because there's just too many of you, Peterson, you know, KP, Saracens, whoever, playing so well right now. I just feel like it's, internationally, it's just going to waste.
yeah, exactly. Hopefully there'll be games this summer now, we can get the ball rolling again for World Cup 2023.
Yeah, all right, AJ, thank you again. Hope to talk to you again soon, maybe near the end of the season.
Yeah, no, appreciate that. Thanks very much, Bill. It's been great to come on and chat.